Blog Talk Radio.
Warning. You are about to leave your comfort zone. Beyond the teachers. Beyond the gurus. Beyond duality. Ever beyond.
Good evening. Good afternoon if you're in the west coast of the States. And good morning if you're in the Far East. Hello, this is Jeremy Perrin, and I'll be speaking with Eli, how do you pronounce it?
Just call me L, Jeremy. It's probably
L is very much easier. El Priest. We are talking with El Priest, and we will be conversing many things. We're going to be talking as a kind of current here and now issue about. There's lots of issues in the New Age and light workers movement. There's a lot of division and argument that is going on at the moment. And we're also possibly seeing a lot of government shill people being exposed. And in fact, there's a vast amount of data and information that is being released right now as we speak. There's whistleblowers blowing whistles all over the place. And we're in for a very, very interesting winter, I must say. Not only a very interesting one, but also probably a very, very cold one. So we'll be discussing zero-point energies, which will be very handy in the cold, and the space preservation treaties and economics and the future in general. All in this time little hour, it's going to be quite a densely packed information hour. So without further ado, Ellie, how are you, mate?
I'm doing very, very well. Thanks, Jeremy, and I've been looking forward to having a discussion with you and obviously sharing this information with your listeners on Blog Talk this evening.
That's great. Me too. I mean, I've been really looking forward to it since I saw your talk the other day, which was to a large number of people who really didn't know very much about what you were talking about, except, you know, people came up to me and said, you know, I didn't know about all these subjects that he was talking about. And I was just kind of thinking, actually, I know all of them. I was very aware of everything that you've been speaking about. So it kind of shows me that I'm not exactly normal. I'm not exactly in the center of the mainstream. Let's put it that way.
No, I think if people can understand the niche that I've found myself in, there most certainly it's an exceptional line of work and a field of study, and it's. Not for the faint of heart, and certainly for those with an open mind. So I would encourage everyone to have an open mind who is hearing this information for the first time, and most certainly to check it out for yourself and reference the information, because everything that I talk to you about can be referenced either online or through other channels of information.
Yes, and we'd also like to welcome people in the chat room. We've actually got two chat rooms. There's one that comes with the Blog Talk Show, and hello there, welcome to Funk Soul and to JKB. Hello, yes, you've already been there from the chat room, and I've also got another chat room, but that's at everbeyond.info, but nobody's there, so it doesn't matter. We'll stay in the chat room at Blog Talk Radio. So where do we want to start, Ellie?
I think the best place to start is at the beginning. And I think the most important thing I like to put across to people, and a lot of people may know this, but there are a lot of people who don't know this. Mm. And there's a lot of people, I guess, in our community who may be aware of it, but in relationship to the mainstream, no comprehension at all.
Yeah.
And the first thing I want to explain to people is the nature of information. And as we know, he who controls the information controls the world. That, the food supply and water. But information is a key one, especially in the days of the internet age and electronic communication and so on and so forth. That said, the way that our government infrastructure works is through all the way through from restricted information all the way up to Majestic Security. And that information is heavily and highly compartmentalized. And obviously, local government wouldn't get too far past confidential and secret, possibly secret. But as soon as you start going into federal government and state matters, you'll move into secret, top secret, special compartmented information. And then you move into what Dr. Stephen Greer and others have spoken about as unacknowledged special access programs. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 levels of security clearance before you start moving into private defense-related projects and so on and so forth, scientific projects for the military, weaponization, so on and so forth. Then there's another 28 levels of crypto clearance above that. The thing that I first want to start, because I think it's really important for people to understand why our system doesn't work and how it's gone wrong, how democracy hasn't worked, is that the President of the United States sits at level 17 of top secret crypto clearance. That means there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 levels in crypto alone higher than the President of the United States.
Wow.
Just to put that into a real-term story, when Clinton did his due diligence and asked to have the information, the real information on Area 51, he was told, "We're very sorry, sir, you don't have clearance to access that information."
Mm-hmm.
So straight away, our democratic process and the whole wheels of democracy itself are completely restricted and completely crippled. Because then there's this higher apparatus that is holding high levels of information, and he who has a larger picture of the board controls it, period. So why is the person who is supposed to be the most powerful man in the United States sitting in the middle of the bunch? And this is just using the United States as an example. There are other, obviously, the same applies in the UK. The same would apply in Australia. I mean, I'm speaking about the main kind of echelon nations of New Zealand, Canada, and so on and so forth. But I would go as far as to say that the same applies for all of the major G7, G8, G20 nations,
yeah,
those that are under NATO.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm leading with this is simple, is that we're asking individuals for, when we write letters, we go through our MP or we go through our congressperson or our senator and so on and so forth. In UK, it's through our MP. And if it's an important enough issue, our MP will then raise that. But at the same time, you then can't get past, in relationship to just disclosure, how is President of the United States or the Prime Minister of the UK going to be able to handle the issue of disclosure when he's not even in the top 10 levels of security clearance that begin to deal with the R&D and the information in that subject matter?
Okay, well, that begs the question, who is up there in those levels and how did they get there and how come they're not letting anyone else in?
That question is as deep as a rabbit hole, and of course I don't have all that information, but there is some very good information that can be found. I want to take that back to, I would go as far back as the money changes and the beginning of our economic theory in the world and how we began to create banking infrastructure and economic infrastructure to be able to control the allocation of resources globally. As soon as that financial infrastructure started to come into place, it held the trump card first and foremost always. It has always held the trump card over government democratic process, even other governments around the world. At the end of the day, the dollar rules, the pound rules, and money is the root of the situation. So I would go as far as to say that it is most certainly our banking families And those who are in the very high sectors of the banking community, who we will never know, who are faceless and nameless, we may hopefully one day know them, that exist above the border reserve, that actually have in place these security clearances. I say that because the multi-trillion black budget for the, and this can be referenced in Bill Cooper's work as well, for the underground bases and the secret space program and so on and so forth, the amount of money that would have needed to have been siphoned off and off balance sheet is far surpasses anything you'll ever read in the newspaper about government spending for bridges, buildings, hospitals, you name it.
Yeah, so these are numbers that go beyond the GDPs of countries and things like that.
Yeah, massive. And let's take into account the fact that Andrew Bisaggio's work and his data points and others, and let's just focus on Andy, are fact and can be referenced as fact. And when you have all these data points, you have a saturation of information. So in this conversation, let us just say that we are taking it as given and fact that there is a secret space program. So when one takes into account holistically that in the event there is a secret space program, how does our economy actually look? Not how does it look when we can't see the secret space program because we believe it doesn't exist because we watch too much Neighbours on TV or, you know,
X Factor,
X Factor or so on and so forth. But what does the economy look like if we could see it in relationship to how much has to be churning around between certain syndicates to be able to continue to keep a colony on Mars, have teleportation technology, handle the extraterrestrial presence, handle the media machine which keeps that presence still like a goofy subject matter for the mainstream, so no one wants to take it seriously. You know, all of that costs more than it costs to run cities, because we have to. And then you take into account, I was having an amazing chat with a just on Facebook with a girl named Steph, and something that she actually brought up was then you have to take into account the sort of minerals and precious minerals and mining that would be going on off planet, and what sort of wealth that's bringing into our economy, our black market off balance sheet. And when that's taken into account, it now stands to reason and makes complete sense why all of these people who have had assets for humanitarian programs to advance suppressed technology have been blocked for over a century. And once that's taken into account, I find it puts things nicely into perspective.
So, what would you say was the kind of, if you made a pie chart, how thick would be the slice that is black projects, and how thick would be the slice that is the open, let's just say the exoteric economy, the one that we see.
Okay. Well, I'm going to estimate based off figures that I hear in the mainstream. Which move into, let's just say, several hundred billion you hear is a very, very, very large deal. And to rescue banks, there has been figures of a trillion. Taking that into account and then taking some of the figures I've heard in relationship to assets that really exist in the market that the banks are holding on to and leaning against, often illegally, so that the even the owners of those assets can't actually monetize them or liquidate them or use them legally as to what the proper banking facility says, taking into account the amounts that I have heard and the amounts that I do know exist, I would say that our current economy that we know of is 10%, which is actually quite an interesting mirror of the fact that we're told we only use 10% of our brains.
There's always 10%, isn't there?
Isn't that interesting?
Yes, and 10% of the matter in the universe is visible, and 90% is invisible, dark matter.
And it's funny how we still aren't in the mainstream utilizing that dark matter or that ether or that quintessence or that zero point energy to power our vehicles and our homes.
That's right. Really. We're burning these horrible liquids that are very toxic, poisonous, stink bad, and don't do us any good at all. And cost us a fortune.
Fortune.
To boot.
And that's why.
Yeah.
That's why.
And that's why. That's why we have rickety old cars that churn out poop. And somewhere else in the universe, they're riding around on singularity drives and anti-gravity.
I'm looking forward to that day because I believe it has to come in our lifetime. It must. It's simple common sense that it must.
I want one in my hearse. I've dreamed. I own a hearse, right? It cost me £500, and it's a lovely car, but it's got a 3-liter petrol engine in it. And I thought, no, that's too much. Wouldn't it be cool to have a hearse that just floated an inch off the ground, running on some singularity drive?
Well, as Dr. Carol Rosen attested in the Disclosure Project, and she said that she would swear before Congress to the facts. That Dr. Wernher von Braun did say that we could have had cars that hovered above the ground in the 50s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know.
About 1956, I believe.
Yeah.
The language, this is an independent, this is from outside of Carol Rosen's testimony, is that if you were to study the procuration documents, that's the procurement documents of these government projects. The first part of the 50s, they were saying that they were looking to research and develop anti-gravity technologies. And then in about 1956, they started changing language to exploit anti-gravity technologies. So
yeah.
they'd obviously discovered it by then and figured out how to do it.
Mm.
So that's another data point to say that, you know, all this is not just the ravings of mad hairy people.
No, most certainly not. And it's interesting that those mad hairy people are actually the missing link in our evolution. So maybe it is the mad hairy people that we need at this current juncture.
Yes. Excellent. So I really look forward to having an anti-gravity drive or a singularity drive in my own vehicle just in a matter of years, if not.
I believe it's possible. The only thing that is actually holding it up. I mean, the fact that the technology exists is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we know people who can create it is another. The only thing that is actually stopping it from either a private group or those who are still in the compartmentalized sector of governments but are aware of the fact that they are still wanting to move it forward, the only thing that's stopping it is access to resources, is wealth, which is why, again, it comes back to the banking infrastructure. And even then, it's not that there are those of us who are lacking the wealth.
Mm.
We have the wealth. We have the assets. We have the financing, then that in itself was an equation. But the trouble now is that unless you are in with the banking clique, now I know from RBS, they have a very similar compartmentalized security infrastructure, just like government.
Mm.
In RBS, they call it Chinese walls.
Mm.
And in order to speak from one department to another department, you need what's called a wall crossing permission.
Mm.
Okay, so, and then they have these Chinese boxes. So when you're in a certain Chinese box, you're privy to certain information. So that means that John in one room, who's handling international finance, knows one thing, and Bob in another room, who's handling, say, domestic mergers or acquisitions, knows one thing. And you might speak to Bob with a serious, legit deal that John would get in a heartbeat and know everything about.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you're speaking to Bob about it. Bob goes, no, RBS, don't do that. You're kidding yourself. That stuff's fantasy. RBS don't do that. And he is not in the need to know. So if the bank doesn't want to do a deal, you're speaking to Bob. Bob really believes what he's saying, And meanwhile, you don't get to speak to John in the next room because the bank isn't interested in making money at the higher apparatus of financial infrastructure. And I'm yet to wait to see if RBS wants to prove me wrong. Okay? I would be happy for that. But at the higher apparatus, unless you are in the know or you're one of the club and they haven't you don't have the handshake, then you won't be let through the door. And I will say straight up, we have been attempting in the UK to fund the first project and bring 120 million US into the UK from a clean bank in a AAA rated bank in mainland Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the UK bank would get to do all the due diligence on the funds that they want. They get to do all the proving. They don't need to go into any contract. They get to check it's clean. They get to check out all our guys with all the intelligence contacts that they've got so that they can 100% be sure that it's clean. So there's no risk whatsoever. And the banks in the UK will just not, they're just not interested.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not interested in finance from other sources.
No.
Of course they're interested in making money through loans and getting, you know, Sue and Mary in debt for a house or this and that, because that keeps people slaving for money. But in relationship to bringing new finance in, unless it's your standard political lines, standard with your Chinese war crossing permissions, it's nigh on impossible. That said, RBS have made an announcement after the big action that they had several months ago, where the protesters were clambering around in Edinburgh at the headquarters there. And RBS said, look, if you have a solution, come to us, tell us what your solution is. Because at the moment they're involved in the tar sands investment, which is killing Indigenous kids. I know that Lloyd's were investing in cluster munitions, which look like unexploded kind of plasticky toys to kids, and they go to pick up the toy and it's a cluster munition and they lose arms and legs and so on and so forth. So, you know, that's what our banks, our UK banks, are investing in. Stuff that is actually killing the environment, killing Indigenous kids, and weapons that are doing the same. So you come with a humanitarian project, Jeremy, and you can bring them the money. And in RBS's case, they're needing to be bailed out by the taxpayers. The Treasury's not even telling the taxpayer that it's doing it until months after. They're still giving themselves bonuses, even though their investments are underperforming, and you come to bring clean money that you want to invest into humanitarian initiatives. You can put them on the phone to the heads of state in the African countries, and they're not interested. What is wrong with that picture?
Yeah. So what is wrong? I mean, where do you think we need to abolish? What I'd like to do is abolish all the central banks and start afresh. And I know that there's a large number of people who are willing wanting to do that as well.
I think there is a transformation happening, Jeremy, and I've been watching it, and it's happening slowly, but there is a transition of authority and power happening in the banking infrastructure at the top level at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was quite pleased to be able to confirm some of Benjamin Fulford's work, where he speaks about the Chinese dynastic families releasing wealth, and we're talking about wealth backed by precious metals that has never come on balance sheet before in the banks.
So this is essentially gold that has been mined that has not been registered with the central bullion.
It's not registered per se with your on balance sheet with your banks as mm-hmm. they would have it,
mm-hmm.
because there's far more in precious metals that can be brought through by, let's just use the example of the Chinese dynastic families, than our UK government will have ever heard of, unless they're in the right Chinese box or at the right higher level of crypto or the 10 levels above crypto. In which case, because obviously with all this money, they're not just looking at it, it gets spent. And it gets spent. This is why the Space Preservation Treaty is key. And without it, we don't have legs to stand on. Because the money, the major the spearhead of the economy, and where our technologies and products come from is really the aerospace sector.
Mm-hmm.
The developments that we've had in technology since working at the cut, because that's the cutting edge,
yeah.
And everything comes from the cutting edge. So at the moment, and also through the aerospace, aerospace is coupled with weapons.
Yeah.
So we have a space weapons economy. Everything drives from that. In relationship to the space weapons, that's why the and obviously that's then keyed into exopolitics because of space security and so on and so forth. Where I'm getting at is the current modus operandi for the weapons and aerospace industry is to be creating weapons. Thus, we need to be creating war. Without war, there's no demand for weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And the US is in a situation where without funding, without financing war, and without financing its military, if there was no war tomorrow and the war stopped, the US would have an even more difficult time paying off its national debt. Now, the guys at the top of the crypto clearance and above that know that. But they like keeping countries in debt. It makes them more powerful than the democracies and the presidents and prime ministers of those countries. So, at the moment, without war, the US would be finished.
Mm-hmm.
It needs war to sustain its economy. The space Preservation Treaty, I feel, is so exceptional and exciting because what it creates is a new legal, I use the term legal index, where with this new treaty, with getting a corpus of nations on board properly, and that then begin to change their infrastructure around, which is coupled with Truth Amnesty and the release of advanced technologies, no longer would we then go, right, we only live on this planet, we need to create weapons to continue to drive our economies forward. We then have all these new products. Because at the end of the day, if you start to release the trillions and hundreds of trillions that are in the black economy onto the global market, you would just devalue everything. That's not a solution. That's only if we keep our products and our awareness of our products and services still in a compartmentalized state. If all of a sudden we realize that we're a spacefaring nation, the products and services that would come, the industry that would boom, as von Braun said, we would see more jobs than in any hot or cold wartime in human history, in the event that we sign the Space Preservation Treaty and we transform the space weapons industry, the aerospace weapons industry, into a peaceful space age, space-faring society. In doing that, you've got new automotive industries, you've got anti-gravity, you'll have new transport thoroughfares from the different planets. And with anti-grav and the different drives you've got, makes combustion look like Fred Flintstone, and you're able to get out of our solar system, no dramas at all.
Absolutely.
And this isn't like even, it's not that much of a big deal. The fact that we haven't worked it out yet as a planet is a big deal. This stuff is pretty common sense stuff. And then you take into account, yeah, we can heal human disease. That's key. People won't be dying as much because we'll be able to eradicate AIDS and cancer and starvation and so on and so forth. There's plenty of room on this planet anyway once we get our permaculture and weather right. But I've always said to people, if there's an overpopulation, let's just say there is an overpopulation situation for the purpose of the conversation, well, simple. NASA and science have already recognized numerous sister planets, livable planets to Earth, far away in the distant galaxy. So it'd be quite simple to take an ecologically minded, peaceful space age society with all the right tools and sophistication and kit and go and colonize another planet. If the house is too small, move.
We could hotwire the moon and travel away in that.
Apparently so. So I'd just like to give people the different, a different viewpoint that there are these incredible options, and I believe our children will be seeing them, if not us.
I believe that we will be seeing them, but that's more, there's a lot more hope than belief. But so, Ellie, the Space Preservation Treaty, can you tell me about who came up with the idea in the first place, and who's on board with it, and
okay,
where did it start, and where's it going?
Excellent. Thanks for the question, mate. Well, it started with Wernher von Braun. Obviously, in the last years of his life, he was very, very concerned. And I've had quite a few discussions and very long discussions with Carol, mm-hmm. Dr. Carol Rosen. And essentially, he saw what was happening, and that he warned Carol that the governments, because of the need for war, once they run out of countries to war,
mm-hmm.
They're going to need another enemy. And they're like, well, let's have a common enemy. So von Braun's warning was that they would stage an extraterrestrial attack.
Yeah.
And I think some of the discussion and dialogue at the moment, which isn't working as well as they planned with the Royal Society and the Stephen Hawking's, you know, if ET calls, don't pick up the phone.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably malevolent. A lot of this stuff is beginning to frame mainstream society and mainstream consciousness around the extraterrestrial issue. You know, with the guy from the Vatican coming out and going, and I will get back to topic, don't worry, Jeremy, this is building a context, with the guy from the Vatican coming out and going, you know, if extraterrestrials come, we will anoint them into Catholicism or something like that.
Oh, yes.
How arrogant is that? But secondarily...
Excuse me while I LMAO.
Oh, terrible. So, what I'm getting at is that there's already interests that are beginning to frame perception around what von Braun had said. That said, I don't believe they will succeed. So, Carol then took it on board to stop weaponization of space. And she's been doing it now for 30-something years. And between Carol and Alfred Lumbermont Weber, who most will know as the founding father of exopolitics, they got together and Alfred wrote the treaty. And essentially there have been discussions with heads of state, and it still is yet to pass. I mean, I remember I was having a discussion that was involving heads of state, but the heads of state are still looking for a charity like ISIS to finance the whole treaty. At this current juncture, it's the same situation. We have the finances. People like me who are involved in, we're kind of like the in-between guys between the project and the finances, and we find, you know, we make the relationships happen. But at the moment, we can't move any of these incredible projects forward because it comes back to the fact that banks have been blocking them. So my whole question, though, on of how serious heads of state are to come and sign the treaty is, well, if you want peace in space, and I think peace on Earth is pretty important too, so how about not just buying one of those tanks or one of those helicopters in your annual budget and putting that into the signing of and ratification of the Space Preservation Treaty? That's my logic. Unfortunately, I don't think the heads of state see it that way.
Mm.
That said, anyone is most welcome to go and have a look at the treaty. It is on the Institute for Cooperation in Space's website, where you'll be able to see the website, and that's at www.peaceinspace.com. And that can be, the treaty can be seen there.
Yeah, just drop that into the chat room there. So I have a question from the chat room, from the user Funk Soul. I just happen to know that that's Chris.
Funk Soul.
Hey, Chris. His question is, when does Ellie think that disclosure will happen? This year? Next year?
That's a good question. Thanks, Chris. Well, I'll answer that in two ways. In the first way, I believe that... in many ways, it's already happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an unofficial disclosure. It's they're letting the cat out of the bag, and they're showing everyone the cat But then it's like Schrodinger's box. They're using a very clever media technique. They're showing everyone the cat, but it's the people letting the cat out of the bag that have to name it. And no one's naming it yet.
Yeah, everybody's pointing and saying, oh, there's a cat. But
hello. Everyone's looking at the cat and going, wow, it's happening. You know, there's jet chasing UFOs in Birmingham, and there's ETVs appearing over New York, and there's, you know, I had direct contact to 3 foot. I mean, I've never been that close. I had some experiences as a kid where there was three beings above my bed. I saw UFOs with my family after that when I was about 9. And then it was after that I was about 17 and I saw some stuff. But I'd never seen anything like I saw in 2009. I had 3 foot contact. So there definitely is stuff happening, and there's stuff happening in the media and the Royal Society and with the release of all the documents. But I think what Chris is saying, official disclosure. When will someone like the President of the United States or...
Yeah,
you know,
when did we watch the 2-hour program that David Wilcock promised us last year?
Yeah, well, I would just go as far as to say that at the beginning of this year, I thought it would be this year. But I personally, in relationship to the work that I do, met an incredible amount of resistance. And I've backed off a bit because I'm just changing strategy. And I feel that the main thing that I can be doing is making sure that I stay on top of financing. But in relationship to my answer to that question, I believe that it's going to have to be 2011. I would foresee that it would make sense for it to be 2011, because I also feel that it's now in the covert interests to begin to tell this story.
Yeah.
But they're not going to tell it if they don't have control over it. They're not going to be... And this needs to be well understood. This is the United States government, or the people that control it and others. I mean, the Mexican government has come out and talked about this. France looks like it might. But at the end of the day, this whole issue is very much a very American issue, and Russian as well, because it goes back to Eisenhower and the Greys and the trilateral logo and so on and so forth. Back when this all started in the late 40s, early 50s, when there were meetings that took place.
I had the pleasure of speaking with Laura Eisenhower last Thursday. I was interviewing for another show. So
excellent.
And we were talking about the relationship between the Tibetan Buddhists and Eisenhower and the extraterrestrials and things like that. It was a very interesting show.
Very interesting.
So going back to that, from what I understand, and from what the general meme that is floating around is, that there was a meeting between Eisenhower. Apparently, he went to the dentist. He was supposed to get, to go to the dentist, and he actually went to an Air Force base. They zipped him off, and then there he was, standing in front of a little fellow, and they made a treaty. And the treaty was to say, we're here, but you're not going to tell anybody about it, and we're not going to tell anybody about it. We're going to erase people's minds. We're going to mess about with some people, but that's with your permission, thank you. And here's the technology in exchange.
Yes.
And you're not going to tell anybody for 70 years. And that 70 years runs out next spring. That's the story that I have heard.
Yeah, very similar. And I want to point out an interesting thing about that story in my own personal life was that I knew that story before I'd ever read about it. I was surprised when I read one day, oh, these extraterrestrials exchanged technology for being able to harvest human embryos and DNA and basically abduct people. And I knew that inherently anyway as a kid. And I just thought, oh, it's just one of those things that I must be daydreaming about. And I knew that as a kid, and then I end up being able to reconcile that information as an adult. So just using that as a little anecdote. But what I know is that that actually led into the fact that the Greys, the lying little bastards that they are, excuse my language, but they are, they began to harvest, as they call it, way more human beings than what was in the contract.
Yeah.
And the US government got really worried.
And they were like, so stop us.
They'd given them Dulles. And so the US government went into Dulles and other bases, but Dulles is the main base at the time that was being used by the ET, by the Greys.
Do you mean Dulce?
Is it Dulce?
D-U-L-C-E.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dulles is, Alan Dulles, he was one of the MJ-12. And Dulles Airport is named after him.
Got you.
But, they pronounce it Dulce.
Dulce. Well, thanks for the correction.
In New Mexico. Sorry about that. Yeah.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah. So anyway, they gave, with the correct pronunciation, they gave them Dulce, and there was a full-blown battle, war, that happened, small scale, but underground between the U.S. military and the Greys. Mm. And the Greys kicked them, still hold higher terrain in that area, and nothing's changed. As I know, though, there aren't as, and from the information I've been looking at, there aren't as many abductions as there used to be. Mm. And I am told by people that, you know, I see what these Zeta Reticuli, these Greys have done, would never trust them.
Yeah.
But people are bringing information forward now, like these race of beings are changing and are changing their agenda and so on and so forth. The reason they wanted to do that was because human beings are about to go through quite and are going through quite an incredible genetic shift, and we're going through what people in the more New Age community called ascension. Yeah. And I think these Zeta Reticuli wanted to catch the boat with their bodies. So they were trying to merge their bodies with the human genome and trying to merge genomes. And I can confirm that does happen. There are my lab experiences where embryos have been taken, so on and so forth. So those experiments have occurred. It's pretty atrocious. It's pretty frightening. And I couldn't say whether it still goes on or whether it doesn't go on anymore, but it certainly did go on.
Mm.
And so that's another reason why the U.S. government doesn't want to come out and come clean, because it actually has to air some of its dirty laundry.
Absolutely. It's very guilty about
very
a
guilty.
Lot of it. Yep. Because they basically opened the gateway because of their greed of wanting more power, more technologies, yep. and things to defeat whoever decides to rise up against them. And that's probably all tied in with the economic world development of the banks who run America rather than America themselves.
Indeed.
And so then we have Operation Paperclip. Which, that's how Carol Rosen got to speak to
Bob right.
Brown. And that Paperclip wasn't just rocket scientists. There were all sorts of other nefarious Nazis who came across. From what I believe, the population is now around 1 million. It started off like something like 50,000 Nazis were bleached. They were bleached in Scotland and then brought over to the States and renamed. You know, people got, Mengele became Mr. Green. And you have all these Nazi scientists who then were embedded within the CIA and eventually took over a large part of it. Obviously, there's a group of white hats in there as well. But
there is, yep.
Essentially, why people don't trust the CIA is because it can't be trusted, because it's been infiltrated by the the worst kind of people that you can imagine. And they do the worst kind of things that anyone can imagine. Seeing the germ bombs and AIDS and all these awful things that have been visited on mankind because of this little project. people have no idea how much more. I mean, that's again, this is one of those 10% things. You know, we've only seen a tiny bit. We ain't seen nothing yet.
Mm.
And hopefully we'll never see it. Hopefully we'll get it in time. Can you speak a little bit about Carol Rosen and her interactions with Von Braun?
I don't know a lot. She's never gone into her personal relationship with him,
mm-hmm.
not in great detail. We've always spoken about the legacy
right.
and the mission mm-hmm. and what actually has to be done.
Right. Well, let's talk about that.
Well, at the moment, I think at the end of the day, what has to be done is it's a relationship of things that have to happen in correspondence to each other.
Yeah.
You can't just give the world zero-point energy. You can't just give the world a cure to cancer. You can't just fix the third world problem by itself.
No.
You can't just say, well, the US is in debt, however many trillion, or this part of the world's in debt. Here we go. Here's all the money. Let's just write it off.
Mm.
Because the problem is endemic. All of these things are symptoms, and the symptoms themselves have to be fixed with the one key solution. And the solution comes from essentially what is the relationship between zero and infinity. It's an inherent mathematical relationship, but it's also, it's when you have a look at Nassim Haramé's work
mm-hmm.
and you see how incredibly complex that is and yet how very simple it is,
mm-hmm.
that's the way this, at the end of the day, has to be looked at. So in relationship to giving the world free energy, well, it hasn't happened yet because disclosure hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm.
Disclosure hasn't happened yet because the energy markets aren't primed for it. The energy markets aren't primed because there's still imbalances in the economy and in the other markets. So all of this has to be interconnected. We have to have a truth amnesty, as Alfred Lumbermont Weber calls it, on what actually happened, where we went wrong. In order to establish why we're where we are, we need to go all the way back to the zero point of what was the turning point of how we got like this.
Yeah.
What was that point where the lie was told? Then we need to deconstruct that. And actually, there needs to be rational, global dialogue, this type of dialogue, at the world level, at state and official tables, so that all of these subjects together can be handled at the one time, because they're all the one subject.
Yeah.
The moment we begin to talk about things separately, we're going to get lost. Because it has to happen at a zero point. The world has to go through the eye of the needle.
So the
as
zero
I spoke
point
about
here.
At the World Peace Congress. Well, that's the thing. The key, another little anecdote, and I know we're running short on time.
If people in the chat room wish to continue listening to our conversation, we can actually have an extra hour edition. It gets put onto the archive, but it's not transmitted live. But if anybody wants to keep connected with us, they can dial into the show. You can use Skype to do so, and you click the button that says click to chat, and it can connect you through your Skype or through, or you can dial up if you're in the States.
Let's let people in your chat room make that decision. If they have any questions afterwards, we can continue on.
Yeah, and I'll keep my eye on the on the switchboard. But
this is what I like to call the biological coefficient of zero point, because inherently we're actually talking about something that is already within us.
Mm-hmm.
We already have the technology. Our human body is the most advanced piece of technology we'll ever own, better than we could ever build. That said, then you take into account issues of levitation, teleportation, dreaming, psychokinesis, telekinesis, spontaneous healing. All of these type of things are inherently based in the very same science that gives rise to zero-point energy and anti-gravity and so on and so forth.
That's new physics.
It is a new physics,
mathematics.
For sure. Yeah, very key. And one of the key problems we've seen in our classical mathematics is that they strike off zero and infinity to be able to do their equations.
Mm.
So they're taking the two most important axes of math and trashing them.
Yeah.
It's like this junk DNA that they call it.
Yeah.
And so that's it.
That's the bit that helps me, you know, grab that can from across the room with my telekinesis.
Indeed, it actually is. So humanity are very much at the birth and threshold of, as a collective body, beginning to learn about these things again and to be able to apply them. But we're going to be living in a very different world than we do today when such a thing occurs.
Mm.
What I foresee is that there actually needs to be a triggering event. And we've all been talking about a trigger event. Will it be this? Will it be that? Will it be the economy's collapsing? Will it be... there is a triggering event, and it happens at some point. What it is, I'm still not 100% sure. I thought I had it nailed down last year.
We all did. We all saw these different scenarios unfolding, and finally none of them happened. You know, money was placed in places, and these things didn't happen.
The look at how resilient our Earth is.
Mm.
From the Gulf of Mexico as a major example, and then you even have to look how resilient our governments are and we as people are, and the whole thing that we call life. We're still here.
Mm-hmm.
We're still breathing. We're still living. We still get to wake up in the morning. We still get to breathe the fresh air. We still get to swim in clean oceans, relatively clean oceans in most parts of the world. There's been 10 million doomsday warnings.
Mm.
And there's people still going, the poles are going to tip, you know, India's going to be underwater, all of these types of scenarios.
Mm.
My simple response to that is, why do that? Yeah, there may be changes on the Earth. There may be scientific readouts and things may and are changing. However, when you look at the fact that scientifically we know that reality is a hologram and that rules can be bent whenever we want and that things are only so real as we understand, comprehend and believe them to be, that this world is actually a flicker of an illusion, where is the science that says this hologram has to turn into some sort of apocalyptic scenario for us to all change?
Mm.
Why create that? What happens when massive waves, comets and volcanoes come is that heaps of people die and we miss an incredible opportunity, which is an opportunity to get together as a human family, maturely, forgive each other, bring forgiveness, bring love, bring heart, bring truth, bring peace. It's not naive. Everyone is a human being on this planet. There are extraterrestrials, sure, but we've got some incredible friends in star nations that are rooting for us not to have to go through apocalyptic scenarios.
And I must add, are essentially human as we are.
Indeed. With a sense of humor, with their own follies, with their own evolutionary path, maybe somewhat further along than ours. But at the end of the day, it just looks different. It's like the chess player who gets really, really good at one level, and then all of a sudden he's playing someone from a far higher level, and he feels like he's back in kindergarten.
Mm.
Such will be our evolution, our soul's evolution, ad infinitum. That's the beauty of it. We're going to be here forever. Maybe not on Earth forever, but Earth will certainly be here forever.
Mm.
And why create a reality where we have to begin to create the species all over again rather than jump and hit that quantum leap where we all actually get it, we can get our diplomacy right, we can get our international relations right, we can get our extra-political relations right. They may not be perfect, but they certainly aren't not taking into account the other 90% of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
That junk DNA is divine DNA. that the other 90% of security clearances becomes a body of human knowledge.
Absolutely.
And that all the junk and all the crud and all the trash, we trash it. We get rid of it. Mm-hmm. We use it as fertilizer. We use it to grow something better.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel it's that much of a big deal, to tell you the truth. Because the reality is, the reason why governments are pissed off is because there's not enough apologizing. There's not enough forgiveness. There's not enough tolerance. There's not enough understanding. All of these things can be had between governments. The trouble is, and I'll come back to the main problem that we face at the moment, is the fact that there's not enough resources. So without enough resources, you have competition driving the market. Mm. When competition drives the market, the bully will win. The guy who isn't as strong won't. He won't have as much to feed his family, so he'll end up feeling pissed off. So there's only one turkey at the table of 100 men and women, mm-hmm. and they're all fighting over this one turkey. Of course they're going to, because instinct will take over. But what
without realizing that there are turkeys wandering around outside the building.
Yeah, exactly. So we're trying to dig for oil, mm-hmm. and erect extremely expensive wind power and solar power and all of that, when in one cubic centimeter of space-time there's enough energy to power a city.
Yeah.
The table is actually laden. And there's so much food that everyone's enjoying themselves and can't possibly eat it all. It's a feast. This planet is more abundant than we can actually comprehend.
Mm.
It's just we're still thinking like cavemen. We actually haven't evolved from a very primitive state. We still are clubbing each other for the scraps on the table.
Or you could say that we've been restricted from evolving, or we've been de-evolved, because I believe that, you know, in the past we've had some pretty terrific civilizations and some pretty nasty ones as well. particularly one that destroyed the particularly terrific situation. But I believe that there's been a large number of intelligent beings on this world, including us. But, you know, in the last 13,000 years, we've been we were basically invaded and taken over, but in a kind of invisible way. They've put themselves into an invisible place.
That's a very hard place for the allies amongst us to deal with,
yes.
you know?
Yes.
But we are, and people are, and I do see positive things happening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't have all the scientific data on what the future looks like, but I can... The fundamental that I do know is that this universe, yes, is a hologram, and we create it as we see fit.
Mm.
So let's create a good one.
So listen, we're 3 minutes away from the end of the allotted time. But like I said, we can carry on, and people can pick up their archive in the morning and hear the rest of what we've been speaking about. We've got another question from the audience here, and we'll answer that after that. But like I said, if anybody wishes to join us, I can't see anybody calling in. So in a couple of minutes, we'll be saying goodbye for now. But Ellie and I will continue to speak for at least another few minutes to tidy up the questions. All right, we've got a minute and a half to finish this. So I'd like to thank everybody who's in the chat room there and who's been listening online and those people who are listening on the podcast. Well, welcome to another couple of minutes. So, with regard to the disclosure pattern, what do you think? Where do you think it's going to lead?
Well, I feel that it will. The only place it can lead that's optimistic and successful is to a peaceful space age society, where we see. The civilization as we know it will be terraformed completely.
Mm-hmm.
That we will see a whole new ecological mindset come in, because first and foremost is that common sense prevails. We live on a planet that is alive, and life requires certain elements to continue to be sustainable. Poisons are bad, pollution's bad. A lot of the junk we're using in the industry we use at the moment because of oil is a byproduct of the fact that we're just not using clean energy.
Mm.
By switching over to clean energy, we see a renaissance on this planet, and we see a space-age society that we can only begin to comprehend. And that's our future. That's the way it goes. Once disclosure happens, I believe that human beings will be spacefaring as a culture very quickly.
Mm.
And there's a whole universe out there, a whole cosmos out there to explore, to learn about. A new science, you could never run out of things to do at infinity and places to go to live.
If we can get off this planet, we'll notice that things are slightly different when you step away from it, when you step outside the solar system, different laws of physics apply and things like that.
It'll be incredible.
It'll be a very... I mean, when I was a kid, I mean, probably like you, I read Asimov and Harlan Ellison and The Stainless Steel Rat and all these amazing science fiction books. And some part of me really recognized that it wasn't so much of a story. It was, you know, there's some realities behind that. And as I've grown up and delved into this world, it turns out that I was actually right, like you were, that there is a reality behind it all. And basically anything that you've ever seen in a science fiction film has already been done. It's not like something from the future. It's not like the 23rd century. It's actually the end of the 20th century and the 21st century. So... I so am looking forward to the time when these control structures actually step aside. From what I can gather from the webbot, are you aware of the webbot?
Yeah, I'm aware of the webbot.
We have just moved past the webbot's large 10 to 12 day turning point, tipping point. Is his jargon for this. And I really believe that it's to the tipping point that that he's referring to is very much connected with this very invasive pat-down, opt-out situation that's going on with airports, and that it is going to spiral out of control. And because this is the one thing that really started during this time is that people are starting to say, hang on, this is invasive, this is molestation and all of these things. And, you know, we don't want you to do this. And I don't care how much security there is, this is wrong. And I believe that this is the moment that the American people, which is where it's got to start. The American people have to turn around and say, no, this is enough.
Most certainly, mate. I mean, it's been enough for a long time, but the more they layer on more and more levels of bureaucracy and more levels of insanity that can only come from such a very broken and very inept system of control, and more people are waking up, and you see it every day. You see the massive amount of people that have congregated on online and social networking communities and so on and so forth that are just like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, what are we doing? And the key is going to be media, and we do have some incredible media opportunities that are being created, and new media technology and so on and so forth. Because at the moment, at the end of the day, no matter how much we push this information, until it actually goes into mainstream media, you're not going to see a massive new audience. People are waking up every day,
mm-hmm.
but we actually, I believe, do need mainstream media to basically turn the coin on disinformation and perception of disinformation. But I'm actually even starting to see that happen very slowly as well,
yeah.
as you see with the news coming out about the extraterrestrial sightings in New York, and the news are being more open about this subject matter, and the news are being more open about the architects investigating World Trade Center building number 7 collapsing because of fire and so on and so forth. So there is, you know, it's slowly and surely, The one thing I do want to say about the government coming out with disclosure is that they're not going to come out with it until they know they can control it to their own end.
Of course.
I don't see, until there is collective dialogue, truth amnesty, release of the technology, and forgiveness like we saw through Nelson Mandela after apartheid, that I don't see that we're going to see open governments who are in power for humanitarian reasons. At the moment, you can be damn sure that if a government's planning disclosure, it's going to use it to strategically continue to strangle its way into more power. And I would love to be proved wrong, but common sense prevails in relationship to government policy at this current juncture.
So far, yes.
Yeah, so far.
What do you think about the idea that there is a group of people who also have contact with extraterrestrials, who are on the quote other side, as it were? You could call them the Earth allies, the people who are aligned very much with what we've been talking about and our way of thinking. And do you think that there is a group that is working behind the scenes in government?
Oh, yeah, they exist. They exist for sure. There's definitely both sides of the coin, and there's been an ongoing full-scale spy espionage battle between the two for a very long time. And I'm, you know, of course, those in the darker elements have held a lot of the power for a while, but that's starting to loosen. And as soon as you get in the top 10 levels of security clearance, the battle, and I'm not actually speaking from a huge amount of experience in the recent months, but what I can say is that the capacities of intelligence is essentially cosmic. That once you take into account that time travel teleportation technologies have been actualized and have been utilized by the CIA, Bisaccio says, Project Pegasus in the late 60s, that these technologies are still being utilized today. So it gives you an idea of the current spectrum of the playing field. So it's fascinating. And I can personally say that I have had experience with an organization which is more secret than you can imagine. And I, from that organization's perspective and the fact that I know it exists, and the only reason it can exist in our human future, and at least this timeline, is because the human planet and planet Earth and the human race succeed in moving through this pretty rocky and turbulent time together. And that organization, I feel, are pretty laid back because they know everything's okay. All of this has already happened. It's just how we're going to get here together. Because time itself is connected, as we know. It's not just linear, so everything has already happened. So if it has already happened, and there are elements that can come back from the future into our present time to be able to assist, then it stands to reason that we move through into the future successfully. That's my logic on it anyway, from the information and intelligence I've received, and that shows that there's some exceptionally incredible forces at work on this planet and off it that are here for no other reason than to support the evolution of the human being and the human consciousness and the planetary consciousness and the cosmic consciousness, because in assisting us, we're helping the whole cosmos evolve. And
this is what I've heard, is that all the dark stuff that's happened on our planet and the oppression and everything like that has had a knock-on effect in the universe and the multiverse and the galaxy, on many, many levels, and particularly with nuclear explosions, that they tear little holes in the space-time and create rifts that I believe a team has been brought back from the future to fix.
Well, there was that story of that guy who rocked up at CERN, and he was very kooky. He was wearing some type of tweed vest. And they arrested him snooping around, and he said, look, I'm here from the future. I can't remember the exact story, but as far as I know, it was I'll try and find it online afterwards. As far as I know, it was a real story, and was arrested, obviously, and then he was taken into a cell, and when the police went and looked back in the cell, the dude had disappeared out of the cell. Gone. So he may very well have been from the future. I hope we don't wear tweed vests in the future, but maybe that was just his fashion sense.
Yeah.
Mind you, I'm from Scotland, so, you know, tweed vests are amongst the older folks. Not too much bad thing.
Oh, yeah, but it still feels itchy. Against my hair, it would be pretty itchy.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's everything that we've thought of, I think it's a safe bet that everything we can think of in science fiction is science fact. And that this reality is a whole lot more strange than science fiction that we've ever had, you know, than we could ever conceive. Just have to look at our insect world to comprehend the incredible diversity that of experience that there is. So, you know, I'm looking forward to our future. This is a very stuffy place without our freedom. We don't have freedom. We're so locked into this matrix. We're so locked into this slave-driven system for the banks that it's a beautiful planet, but in relationship to our work and exploration and the adventure that can be had here and the paradise that this place is, we're a far cry from it. And I look forward to days that are a lot easier when all of us can breathe a sigh of relief because we've stopped giving each other such a hard bloody time. You know, so I'd love to see some anti-gravity made, an anti-grav bike, some zero point energy in the home. You got an anti-bike or an anti-grav vehicle in your carport, your garage. You can fly out of the planet. The Earth's healthy, there's no poisons, there's no toxins, there's no pollutions in the wrong spot. And children are growing up, and every single child on this planet has a roof over their head, has warmth when it's cold, has clothes, shoes, food, and clean water. It's not a lot to ask.
Not much at all. Can afford it. If we can afford to be in Iraq every day for X how many millions it costs. We can afford to send Obama over to the Far East for 10 days at the cost of $2 million a day, $20 million a day, whatever it costs. I believe that the figure was inflated
offended.
Because of a couple of Indians sort of exaggerating. still, it was probably an expensive trip. And what happened to the fleet that he took over there? I mean, he obviously flew home in Air Force One, but where's the fleet gone? I believe that they've gone over to the Gulf of Aden. What's your feeling, or do you have any information about the Gulf of Aden?
Oh, I don't have any more information than what I'd heard when I spoke to Aaron McCollum and what can be read on the internet. As far as I know about the Gulf of Aden, and I haven't been following that closely for some time now, but there was a Stargate that opened up, and a lot of ships went into that area, and let's face it, the amount of artillery they sent into that area, the amount of power they sent into that area, considering the threat, was utterly ridiculous.
Yeah.
So there's most certainly something major going down or had gone down in the Gulf of Aden. And because there's more noise coming from there, it would suggest that whatever was going down back when the Gulf of Aden came up is still happening. And I was very interested to hear that Obama had warships, more warships going with him. obviously they'd take a little longer to get to India, but part of the Navy was leaving as well.
Yeah.
So, very interesting. Very interesting.
Interesting.
At the end of the day, we shall see. I mean, from my perspective in relationship to practicality, there's not a lot that I can personally do until we start to see allocation of resources. Because there's already 1,005 people on the speaking circuit with their websites putting this information out. It's an absolute pleasure, of course, to every now and then speak to someone like yourself and share what I know and what I'm going on publicly. But at the end of the day, I've always kind of just sat back. We're working to, essentially, we know the inventors, we know the guys from the defense projects. As soon as we have our assets monetized, it's as simple as putting those into good, solid R&D programs. We've got access through compartmentalized channels, but we can have 700 MPs and the Prime Minister. I know a guy who's friends with the Energy Minister. We took Tesla's diaries to the table in the House of Commons and put them down, myself and Dr. Roy Malcolm, and told them about zero-point energy. And they were fascinated. They want to see it. They would love it. But they want to see us bring it to Britain. So our goal is to bring an operational device to Britain securely, and we're going to demonstrate it in an event we call Event Zero. And it's going to be a massive rock concert. We're going to put the device on stage at the concert, and we're going to have it power the whole stadium. That's what we want to do. We want to have guys from Princeton and Harvard and you name it there at the concert to go, yep, this device is powering the concert, the lights, the band, the music, the amps, everything, because we've unplugged the stadium from the grid. We've unplugged the block from the grid. And this device is powering the block. That, to me, is proof. People want proof. We're not asking anyone to believe. I'm not asking anyone to believe what I say, anything I say. You've got your own choice in that. But when we show proof, when we show empirical proof that, yes, it can be done, we change the technological and industrial philosophy of the world for good, forever.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to do. We want to televise it to the world. We want to put awesome bands up. You know, I know everyone in Hollywood and celebrities and music artists and, you know, we know everyone. That's not the issue. The issue's been being blocked by the bloody Rothschilds and whoever else is running the syndicates. It's an issue. So until that day comes, we just keep diligently, with as much humility as one can summon from times, moving forward.
Yeah. With plenty
and
of
then
humor
obviously
as well.
From that demonstration, we get there's the proof. So then all of a sudden, everyone who always said, oh, you're an idiot, you're a nutter, you're a crazy person, so on and so forth, they're all the ones coming, oh, we always said that this would happen.
Yeah.
And they're lining up to be the first to be able to take on board these technologies, which will be fantastic. And then once that one trigger point happens, it'll open the floodgates of everything else. Because you have to prove what the fundamental flaw is in our physics, which has governed and created our economies, our democracies, our technological and engineering progress has all spun from what Einstein incorrectly called the supreme metaphysical law of the entire universe, what Newton called the second law of thermodynamics. Einstein was wrong. Newton was wrong to a point. What no one actually talks about, and this is Professor Robert Pope's work, he was awarded a prestigious Vienna Prize for his research into this area. Newton published the second law of thermodynamics and mechanistic theory because it was allowable by the church. But he was currently working on a balancing principle, the feminine principle, to the mechanical law of second law of thermodynamics. He was working on the intuitive principle as well, but he didn't publish that because he would have been burned at the stake by the church. So we then So he published the second law of thermodynamics, and we took that forward, which states that the universe is finite, that there's only so much of something to get something out of. So that when there's only so much of something, competition drives the market.
How convenient.
And then if everything turns into death and decay, and our nuclear infrastructure, our energy infrastructure, our economic infrastructure is all based on decay, then is it any wonder that our current societal infrastructure looks like it's heading to an extinction point? Yeah, it will, because it's actually based on the second law of thermodynamics. But that's just an idea.
Yeah. As much of an idea as the idea of money. It's a belief system.
Yeah, it's a belief system. So the moment you upgrade that to the fact that the universe is infinite, mm-hmm. you just have to look at Mandelbrot's set to know that the universe is infinite. You don't need to look too far. Mm-hmm. Stick two mirrors together. Boom. If the universe can show an example of itself ad infinitum, it's as simple as that a finite system cannot demonstrate infinity.
Yeah.
Because infinity is an outside-of-the-box law to the finite system. So what scientist on this planet could possibly be that stupid? Let me tell you, most of them. They might be some of the most intelligent men on Earth, but with a drop of common sense, we'd see a renaissance.
Mm.
Common sense is king in this regard. So, you know, here we are. And it's, you know, we'll see it happen one day. And whether it's us and our company and our guys who do it or another group, whoever's first to the line in regards to the delivery of this tech, you know, I'll be the first standing up and giving a standing ovation to. And hey, if we get our Event Zero rocking and things move quite nicely as we're seeing the move in the banking infrastructure at the moment, then we'll have an awesome rock concert with some pretty cool technology to deliver to the planet.
Cool. So, I'll play in that.
Yeah, awesome.
And I'll bring my band.
It's supposed to be a celebration, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a celebration for the planet. So here we are, and it's always a pleasure, Jeremy, and thank you for inviting me onto the show.
Right. Well, I have one other question, which was given by Chris, who's actually connected into the call here. His question is, has Ellie ever been subjected to psychic attack with his work? And if so, how has he dealt with that?
Cool. Yeah, I have. And as soon as I'm aware of it, that's the key. As soon as you're aware of it, the trouble with psychic attack, Chris, is when you're not aware of it, you're under attack. That's it. And you have to begin to identify if it's you and your own internal thought processes. That's one thing. But as soon as, and there's pretty simple ways to be able to identify whether it's an internal process that you're feeling bad, your health or something else, or whether it's psychic attack. There's a few mechanisms I have to know whether it's psychic attack. Breathing is one of them. Breathing on the source of the problem. If you have a deep belly breath, it's good for you. If you have a chest breath, it's not as good for you. So I ask myself, is there psychic attack going on? There's a direction you can look with your eyes, which will give you a yes signal or a no signal, or my breath is a huge indication. So if I identify that I'm under psychic attack, then I can quite easily call up protection. And with that done, and there's different ways that can be done, but intent is key, and knowing. Intent and knowing. Knowing that you can protect yourself and shield yourself from anything straight away will change the entire atmosphere of your thought process, of your emotional process, of anything. So I don't find it too much of a hassle. It used to be, but then I've been under a huge amount of pressure at some points during this work, and I don't think there is that anymore, to tell you the truth. It feels pretty free and easy these days. I just feel that we're going to see this happen, and we're going to see this succeed. Maybe once these resources are allocated and we're monetized, they might, you know, darker elements might want to step back in and cause a stir, but at the moment, things are pretty good. So, yeah, good question. It does occur, but, you know, just putting up a shield around you with intent and visualization is generally enough. But I also have an interesting framework around Koala, which is an agency from our human future, Sentinels, which are actual real extraterrestrial, ultra-terrestrial beings, and so on and so forth. I mean, I had a very interesting experience with a craft coming in. We were on a mountain in the Highlands, myself and Black Sunfeather and Dr. Osiris Funkukum. We had this craft coming in, and it felt very malevolent, didn't feel good at all, wasn't flying like a plane or a helicopter, and was moving like an extraterrestrial craft would, but it just felt really bad. And I'd had experience vectoring in craft previously, and we decided that if we had anything that we were concerned about was security on this operation, that I'd vector in some craft. So as this craft is coming towards us, I call the vector code to bring craft, our craft, in, and I put my life, my common sense, and swear by the fact that when I vectored in the craft at that exact moment, two craft shoot from behind the mountain and engage this craft coming towards us, and then all three of them fly off the horizon together. And Black Sunfeather was there right next to me on my right-hand side as a witness to that. He can testify to the fact that that did occur.
Mm.
So, there, you know, there's various levels of security and defense depending on the consciousness you're in at the time.
Mm.
And generally, when they attack is when you are getting close to a trigger point. When you're getting close to a trigger point, you're in a status of moving human consciousness forward in such a way that you're one of the main characters again. And that's where generally they will come at you. At the moment, you know, things are pretty quiet until we liquidate and monetize these assets. So, yeah, it's something that we have to watch out for, but I'm not too concerned about it these days.
That's a great answer. Thank you very much. And also for general psychic attacks, my previous show from last week, which is called Beyond the Soul Journey, contains some very, very useful information from a gentleman named Craig Dew, Scottish fellow, which discusses four basic techniques for protecting yourself, for protecting your emotional body and being able to extend it beyond the protection so you can feel what's going on outside, plus connecting with the mother and with the planetary female divine consciousness. So that's available in the previous show with Craig Dew. That's the Blue Pyramid, D-U-B-H. And... I did have a question, and it did come. It was incredibly relevant, and I can't for the life of me now. This is terrible. I'm really getting old. You know, I'm past 48, and things now have started to go out of my mind. I'll be thinking of something, and it will be completely gone from my mind.
Remember it later.
Yes, that's 3 a.m. I'll be on. Project information generation later on tonight, talking with Jeremiah Duncan about stuff. So it'll probably pop up then.
Yeah.
Chris is writing a question. Do you have any? You got another question there, Chris, in the chat room there?
Yes. Oh, he does.
Yes, it says here. We're waiting for you. Come and type it out. You can unmute yourself if you like and ask it directly. No? Chris, all right, that's a very good question, and probably been on the lips of lots of other people. Have you been abducted, or are you a contactee? Or
yeah, both.
A combination of both.
When I was, the first experience I had as a child that I remember, I was 1988, so I would have been 7 or 8 years old, probably about 7 years old. And that was where there were three beings above my bed, and reverse speech with David Oates suggested that they had actually taken me and put me back and taken the memory.
Mm.
After that, the closest contact I had was in a car with my family. We saw a UFO about maybe 25 metres off the ground. Mm. And the people driving behind us saw it as well. And then when I was 17, I was very close to a black ops that was happening in the area that I lived. I won't go into that full story. It's a very long one. And then when I was 23, I think I was 23, I was most certainly taken involved in some sort of my lab nasty black government extraterrestrial situation. Mm. And there was direct evidence afterwards of that happening, and I was taken on board a black truck. There was a witness there with me at the time, and that's when I had to get very clear about my sole contracts and allowances for stuff like that happening. And I haven't had contact with an unpleasant extraterrestrial presence, so to speak, since then. And the next contact I had was with the most incredibly benevolent, loving, massively compassionate energy and being, I'll call it an ultra-dimensional entity, that happened in 2009, and it was magical. Massive being about 3 foot away from me. Mm-hmm. And it really just showed me the scope of this cosmos. And then as it flew away, I was able to get photos of it as it left the area. And Jeremy, Chris has got another question. Do you want to read it out, or would you like
to? Yes. The question is, what's your opinion of the Greys?
Well, my opinion of the Greys isn't very high at all.
From what you said earlier.
And just to share that the Greys, as far as I know, are the Zeta Reticuli.
Yeah.
And they lie, they cheat, they steal, and they're very bad, and they work with elements that, you know, it's that type of stuff that you don't want to bring to the kitchen table.
No.
It can get pretty nasty, pretty freaky, pretty scary, not nice. Mm. And that's why we haven't seen disclosure, because there is some terribly nasty stuff that people in the government, Truth Amnesty is about people coming forward and going, we did this, we're sorry. And they'll get amnesty, but no one, what's been done because of the Greys is ridiculous. It's because the Greys had no compassion.
Mm.
You can't really actually blame them. They're mentally manipulative, but they don't really have a heart. They don't care otherwise. It's like what we do to, the Greys are as responsible for what they did to humans as humans are responsible for what we do to cattle to be able to eat meat.
Yeah.
Without any emotion, we just farm them, kill them, slaughter them, eat them.
Mm-hmm.
The Greys were like, well, here's some humans that don't know a lot. They're not even spacefaring. They've got no idea. Let's come down here and just harvest them.
Yeah.
And they did. And then, you know, they have a lot to learn as well. But see, they're in their own evolution space. And obviously, that type, once we get our global dialogue happening, that's just one thing. Then we actually have to get cosmic dialogue happening. We become ambassadors for a planet and our part of the planet. Yeah. And then we're going to enter into a whole new world of problems and challenges and so on and so forth. But that's life and that's evolution. Without resistance, we don't grow.
Yeah.
So resistance is fine, but we also need to be equipped with facts. So I would ask now that if there's any Greys listening to this, that they should just stand down. We've had enough. And your time's finished. And so is the Rothschilds and the black government and all these idiots. It's done. Yeah. We can't, you know, all of their plans aren't working. We were supposed to already be microchipped by now, and FEMA was already supposed to have come in by now. It hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm. Thanks to the White House allies.
The intervention. There's too much intervention now. There's too much saturation of information. They've got nowhere to hide anymore. There's too many politically aware people in the world and too many radio shows like this happening around the world as we speak, you know.
Popping up by the day. I've remembered my question.
Oh, excellent.
Tell me. Now, this is when we spoke a couple of weeks ago in the pub in Findhorn, you said a word, which I believe is all in uppercase. Koala.
Koala.
Tell me about what koala was about and what's that got to do with me?
Well, it's interesting that that's the question because I've actually been asked to write a book. I have a publisher. And I've been thinking about how to approach this. And I was going to write a biography, but that didn't feel right. And now I'm writing a book that's going to be about koala. That's going to be about my life and how I've come into contact with koala. And how, because of my contact with koala, I do have cosmic security. And that's a very interesting subject. Now, koala, for people who don't know, is the information has also been channeled and verified by Maya, who channels Thoth. The data points we have that we've collected in our psyops before, that we've then taken and seen how it fits into the Reshell matrix, must work with koala, and various sacred sites around Scotland, actually prove empirically how our relationship with koala has come into being. Koala, in essence, is a futuristic, well, it's an intelligence agency per se, but it's an agency that exists in our human future. To ensure that A, nuclear weapons don't go off, B, that the timelines are clean, C, that we essentially don't blow ourselves up. That's pretty much the sum of it. Now, I first became aware of this agency when I was in Melbourne in 2004. Because there were certain people, certain things, certain moments that came together where I was just sitting, thinking to myself, going, did that happen? Okay. furthermore, I began to move into fields where I'd be given certain intelligence which it falls outside of the normal realms of CIA and MI6 and so on and so forth. I didn't really think too much of it after that. I was just a usual, pretty normal civilian. However, there were certain times in contact with enforcement bodies or enforcement agencies where they would run my details. The first time was when I was in Australia in 19... maybe it was the year 2000, 2001. And I was thinking, I really love to see what information comes up on the police computer screen when they type my name in.
Right.
Because if a car had driven past, I'd be like, I'd love to actually see my information come up on the screen. Funnily enough, I was fixing my push bike that afternoon, and I went for a ride just to check that all was running well. And I didn't put my helmet on. In Australia, you have to wear a helmet. It's illegal if you don't. So anyway, the cops pulled me over. And they hadn't pulled off the road properly. So I made a little comment about, well, if this is in the interests of my safety, perhaps you should actually drive your police car off the road so the traffic that wants to get past won't run into you. So I kind of put them off guard. So they moved the car off the road. And then I was right next to the window of their car as they were running my details. Now, all I saw was that a big exclamation mark came up on the screen, some data rolled down, the cops looked at each other shocked, and then they moved the screen quickly away from me. Started whispering in hushed tones, go, oh, well, we'll just issue you a warning, be on your way. And the air changed completely as soon as my details come up. And I was like, that was really strange. Because I've never been ever in any situation, you know, I was never dealing drugs. I'd never broken into anywhere. I'd come out of a pretty good background. And so I couldn't have seen why there would have been such a response from the police. And then to get me out of there quickly. So that was the first thing. I didn't really think too much of that. Then that day we were in Westminster was actually the 26th of August 2006. Now, that's a pretty important day in airport security history because it's the day that some sort of liquid, which was possibly explosive, was smuggled onto a plane in the UK. And that date is why we have to have liquids in little plastic bags and no more than certain amounts today at every airport.
Yeah.
So it was that day, August 26, 2006, which set off all this liquid drama at airports. So I'm in the UK briefing the head of sustainability with my business associate and the key energy policy writer for the UK about zero point in Tesla. That afternoon, most of the airports are shut down in the UK and the travelling's at a standstill. Luckily,
the bank drop.
Yeah. Luckily, we were at City and it was the one of the only open airports. Heathrow was shut, but the airport was open. Now, my birth name is Peter. I've been Elohai. I changed it spiritually for various reasons since 2004. I changed it. And so my business associate, Roy, had booked the ticket under Elohai because everyone knows me as Elohai, but on my passport, it was still Peter, surname Priest. So when I got to the counter in the UK, I said, look, guys, this is still my surname. Here's my photo ID, but the ticket says Elohai because my associate booked it. And then all of a sudden, I was a major security problem. Now, my name is Hebrew. So all of a sudden, I've got a Middle Eastern name. They're all on freak out alert with machine guns in the airport, and I'm not flying. They say, you are definitely not flying with us today, sir. I'm like, what? I need to fly. I got to get home. And they're like, no, you're not flying. You'll have to book a ticket under your other name. And I said, how will that make me less of a security threat if I book a ticket under another name and you still let me fly if security is... But they were still, like, not having any of it, and I wasn't flying. And, you know, we all know what airport security is like. Okay?
Yeah.
There's no ifs or buts. There's no maybes. There's super over-the-top paranoia. And if you're at all possibly a risk, then they'll give you 30 anal probes if they can.
Yeah.
That's what they do. They're idiots. Anyway, so... I'm here, and I'm going, right, well, what do I do? So I'm speaking to the security, and I'm saying, look, you put the highest security authority and management in front of me right now. I want to speak to them. They say, that's not going to be happening for you, sir. Just like that. You're not flying. That's that. And then all of a sudden, we were waiting there for another 5 minutes, and she's standing there with us, obviously because I'm some sort of terrorist, apparently. And then all of a sudden, through her headset, her little earpiece, she gets some sort of message. She looks at me, her eyes widen. She's all of a sudden going, oh, we're so very sorry, sir. There's been a mistake. You are flying with us today. Please. They didn't even want us to wait at the queue. They moved the queue. They put us straight in front of the people. They gave us 40 quid, no, 20 quid worth of airport vouchers as a sorry. And then all of a sudden, we were getting on the plane.
Remind me to fly with you next time.
I hadn't said anything different.
No.
So what happened? That was the first crazy airport experience.
Mm-hmm.
Then after all this stuff had started to happen, I was running PsyOps for Contact Zero, doing galactic government stuff. It's a long story. I then go, well, okay, if we have to have dialogue about extraterrestrial presence at that heads of state level, And I'm representing a constitution with 5 million people in the government, the Galactic government, which is actually a legal government. It's got Hillary Clinton's signature to sign off on the fact that the institution is legal on the legal documents, which couldn't have been signed by Hillary if they had have contravened any foreign U.S. or domestic laws. So the U.S. government has actually recognized the sovereign body of the Galactic government. So I was asked to be a part of it, and I thought, well, I'm going to need to give myself, as a head of state, I'm going to need to give myself security clearance. So I stuck some cosmic passport in my Australian passport. I was like, oh, I've got cosmic security. I do anyway, because all of this weird stuff has been going on around me since I was a kid. And I've been abducted by some MyLab thing, so I've already got some sort of note next to my name at the high levels of clearance. So how about I just call their bluff? So I stuck a state-level pass in my Australian passport, went, how's your father? Cop that, you mongrels. And anyway, so you should see it, mate. There's only one passport on the face of this planet like it.
Yeah, I've seen it on, I saw it, you projected it on the wall.
Yeah, that's right. It's been through the MOD. It's been to the Home Secretary. It's been to the Defence Secretary. The former Prime Minister was notified about it. I went to the Australian High Commission in London and said, look, I'm a dual citizen. I'm a spacefaring citizen. I'm also an Australian citizen. I also represent at state level an aerospace jurisdiction. This is the embedded mark in my Australian passport. This is my foreign body docking with my Australian passport. I said, it's also a security clearance to hold dialogue on classified information to deal with the extraterrestrial presence. Do you have a problem with it? And they say, let us run your passport for you. So they took my passport. The Australian High Consulate have no problems at all with me being a dual citizen and having security clearance in the Australian passport. Now, that said, you're not allowed to alter or mark your passport at all as a civilian. It carries heavy penalties. Obviously, I've done it the right way and legally, which has made me a sovereign. So going back to the airport, I rock up. I'm coming from Malaysia. No, Australia. Malaysia was just after. I'm coming from Australia. It was a family holiday. I've got my cosmic security. And I have to go through the, you know, I'm a foreigner, lines and queues. And I get to the, finally get to the border. And the woman was like a Hitler. She was Nazi as it came. She was ready to eat me, devour me alive. She wanted to not see me in the country before I even showed her my passport, because I must have had long hair and offended her or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, and this is important. The passport is now such that it's like the first page you open to, because it's thick, so you can't miss it. So she looks at the cosmic security, and she says, what is this? I say, that's my cosmic security to handle dialogue at levels of exopolitical diplomacy. I handle aerospace jurisdictions beyond your level of authority. And this is the mark in my passport, which gives me the ability to be able to hold dialogue between foreign entities. She said, okay, you wait over there. So all of a sudden, I'm on the hot seat. For half an hour, I'm on the hot seat. Dudes with handguns were walking past, and I was packing it, to tell you the truth, because I'd never seen it work before. I actually saw it work through Canada, but I'd never seen it go into the back room before. So it's gone into the back room. Now, you know, these guys are serious. This had some codes on it. It's got some, all sorts of stuff on it. It's got some psi-level stuff on it. Now, at the very least, they've got to ask questions. Now, she went into that room for half an hour. Now, from Nazi wanting to eat me, after half an hour, she came out, bowing, apologizing, saying, we're so very sorry for keeping you, sir. Here, your passport is stamped. Please, we're sorry for holding you up. Please come through into the country. They didn't ask a single question. Now, after ramming it down UK Border Agency's throat, ramming it down the Home Office's throat, ramming it down the MOD's throat, now it says authorised under the MOD and MI6 jurisdiction, Contact Zero. And Contact Zero is MI6's fabled secret career status. And more than that, because Contact Zero is older than MI6, but MI6 probably don't know that. Well, they'd like to know it, but Contact Zero came into MI6 in 1922, which is connected to Koala.
Right.
Contact Zero are as old as Friday the 13th when they burnt the Templar.
It's like Torchwood.
What's that?
Torchwood? It's a spin-off from the Doctor Who series, and it's about an organization that's been around since Victorian times.
Yeah,
to deal with the extraterrestrial presence.
Uh-huh, it's Victorian as well, and I wasn't aware of Torchwood. And, well, it's Victorian.
Great series, though.
Through the Templars, because they then had to become a secret order, because they would be killed, but there were still those that they had trust with, so they began to secretly protect the monarchs, the good monarchs of the day.
Mm.
And thus was born, well, intelligence is very old. I mean, we had spies back in ancient Asia and so on and so forth. But from our intelligence, it suggested that Koala comes back into the 13th century and communes with this Templar order.
Right.
So it seems that the Templars actually had information on this type of stuff early as the 13th century.
Mm-hmm.
Contact Zero, as far as our information puts, it crops up in MI6 in 1922, which is the date we arrived at before we researched when MI6 was set up. And it turns out that the exact year that we arrived for Contact Zero and Koala coming into MI6 was the exact year when we looked it up that MI6 was set up. So we were like, well, that couldn't be a coincidence now, could it?
Mm.
So there are these agencies that have actually infiltrated beyond the infiltrators.
Mm.
But they have to work very, very, very sensitively because there is... it's like you don't want to shock the system. You can't send it into shock. There needs to be a certain way that this stuff aggregates into society. And it's certainly not going to be through, an organization rocking up in the high street, teleporting in and going, "Hi, guys, this is the way it is."
No.
It's got to be a lot more organic than that. So, yeah, they let me through, and my passport still has me authorised under MI6 and the MOD, and MI6 and MOD have still never been able to question me on it, even though I knocked on MI6's back door. I was on the phone after that to bloody Joint Intelligence Committee. The chairman, I mean, we were sitting on technology ready to go, Pentagon contacts over in the US saying, "We've got the technology, reach out to the heads of state in the UK." We had a live op going, and the British intelligence infrastructure just shat itself and dropped the ball.
Mm.
Because the trouble, again, is that most of the apparatus doesn't have access to the top 10 levels of security clearance. That's only a small group. So when you talk about this stuff, even probably to the chairman of the Joint Intelligence Committee, he's going to be going, "You're a lunatic.
Yeah.
You have no idea what you're talking about, and what are you talking about?" Because these people who are at the heads of power are actually have no comprehension that they're not the head. No idea at all that they're not the head. But still, I'm here in Scotland, and here I shall remain. And I'm looking forward to having that discussion with these people. Because the thing is, these people don't want to have that discussion.
No, because it'll take their power away.
That's right. And I was asked by the guys in Westminster, they say, the last time I was in Westminster, they said, "El, tell us what's happening in the secret space program." These are the people who are friends with the energy minister.
Oh.
You know, it's not that they don't know, it's that they won't officially talk about it in their careers. But they can talk about it with me, but they won't talk about it publicly.
Yeah, and I think actually this is one of the things that I believe is a sticking point. Because all of these people have signed, you know, official secrets acts and things like that, and they've been given the clearance, they can't talk about it upon pain of death. I mean, more or less, or even worse, of harm to their families and all that sort of stuff. So they can't talk about it. So they're waiting for us to come along and say, "Excuse me, Mr. MI5, I've heard that la 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 and space program and da 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 da. Is this true?"
Yeah.
At which point they cannot lie to you because you're directly challenging them, and they can say
that's
things
why
like,
they've got an issue with my court case at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a tribunal coming up again in the tribunal this time it's one down from the basically the high London, the high courts in London, or the Royal Court of London, Royal Courts of Justice. So you've got the upper tribunal, then you've got the Royal Court. So this so far has gone to upper tribunal, because the fact of the matter is that I'm an Australian citizen and I have children here in the UK. And I very much love those children and want to see them again. If the UK ends up removing me because I don't qualify for any of their other placements, apart from the fact that I'm a sovereign, and I've stated it several times, and they've actually allowed me in as a sovereign. And this is what I said to UK Border Agency. I said, well, I've already announced myself as a sovereign the last time you let me into the country, and you allowed me in without questioning my security. So we need to have that conversation to be able to grex the situation. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to having that conversation when someone from the government has the balls to have it with me. Because they're going to be like, so I'm wondering what the big problem for me is. I think, because, you know, I don't have any access to public money. I don't want any access to public money. I'm here trying to push this country forward technologically, and we've got investment to bring into the country. If we had a banker tomorrow say, we'd like to meet your principals within about 6 weeks maximum, we bring our financier into the country and we can bring in $120 million for the first deal, $500 million for the second deal, and several billion for the next. It's as simple as that. And I'm not speaking in any other terms than fact. So if it's money that these people are worried about, then all they need to do is cooperate with me, because I have done as much as I can possibly do for them. It's up to them now. You know, so we'll see. So Koala itself, to come back to your original question, is a kick-ass futuristic intelligence agency with access into the extra-political grid, with probably conversations ongoing all the time at diplomatic levels of cosmic intelligence. And it has reference to a pretty incredible being that I have come to know as the Planner, which I believe is pure sentient intelligence. And pure sentient intelligence is the most benevolent, compassionate force of love that I have ever experienced in my life. Anyone who wants to say otherwise, they're welcome to it, but pure sentience is godliness. And it has taken a physical form, and it glows as bright as burning magnesium, and yet it doesn't hurt the eyes or give off heat, and it's as large as a living room, and I have seen it once up close, twice about 30 yards away, and a third time at a distance. And I have photos of the thing leaving the area, and it's not the sun or the moon, and yet it's glowing as bright as the sun would glow.
Amazing.
Pretty cool,
Ellie,
yeah.
Ellie, we have waxed through the second hour.
It's 2 hours.
We have waxed through this last hour. Has just gone like that. It's 3 minutes, and BTR will cut us off. But I think this is a most fascinating conversation. There's stuff here that nobody has heard before. So I really deeply thank you for agreeing to come on the show and for saying what you've said. And I would like to have further conversations. So any time that you get any news, just give us a bell and we'll schedule a show and we'll have you straight on.
I'll let you know, mate, and most certainly what I want to see next is these funds released, because then someone like me can actually get up and do something, you know, and that's what I'm interested in doing. And, of course, Jeremy, you'll be my my first brother on the list for when we get any new intel. I will give you a call. And thank you, Chris, for your questions. And you just wanted to know if I'm getting anything from my dreams from late. And I can only tell you, Chris, that my dreams are... all over the place, bud, and probably a place that I go to heal and sort my own emotions and everything out. And when I have very clear dreams, though, they're exceptional. The very clear ones have been profound in my life, and it's a very good place of guidance. So thank you as well, Chris and Jeremy. It's been a real pleasure these last 2 hours. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. Eliyahu Priest,